Network. The views and opinions presented in this program do not necessarily represent those of WGBB or its employees. You're listening to 1240 WGBB.
The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
From the heart of the nautical mile, you're listening to the station that serves your community. AM 1240 WGBB.com and 1240 WGBB Freeport.
Remember the date, June the 8th, live from WGBB, Long Island's oldest radio station. It's time for
the oldest host of radio show, Dr. Tony Schifo and Dr. John Palmer, and this is, listen up, Jesus is on the air. Tony, are we on the air? Tony, are we on
the air? We're on the air. And your name is what? What's your name again?
I don't know.
Oh, Palmer. Dr. Palmer. And I'm Dr. Anthony Chiffo, and we're here to tell you we're two old geezers, but we love Jesus.
You show off. You have a memory. You show off, and you can remember things.
Yeah, listen, Palmer. Those golden
nurse,
years.
Nurse, wait a minute. I need my Valium. Hold on.
Listen, those golden years that they said, they're not so golden. You know it. I know it.
Golden?
And we got a great show ahead.
Tell them about our
great guest.
Well, we have Carol Rubano with us. And Carol is a wonderful, wonderful counselor, social worker, and has Living Waters Center at St. Elizabeth's Parish. And she does monthly seminars and has speakers. And she has a wonderful Catholic environment for counseling. Important place.
That's a commercial, Carol.
Thank you. The Holy Spirit.
Carol's an old friend of ours. We love her dearly. She's been on the show several times. John and I have made presentations at her council, and we just love her. She's a great woman.
And we also have Father Peter Kasparak, who is the pastor of St. Francis Assisi.
And we love Father Peter because
in Greenlawn
we have our Batania meetings at Father Peter's church at St. Francis of Assisi, and he's so gracious and lets us use the church for our masses, helps us with the masses, lets us use the basement for refreshments. Thank you so much for all you do for us.
God bless you, Tony. And
you also.
The first time we met, that's at a Batania meeting.
Yes, that's when we first met.
And Father has a group going to Medjugorje in 2 weeks, and you can contact him at the parish.
It's still time to get on board if you'd like to go. We have the 8-night trip to Medjugorje and then a 3-night extension to the shrines near Paris, St. Therese, St. Bernadette, the Miraculous Medal, and some other sites to see. So if you're interested in that, get in touch with me, St. Francis Greenlawn.
And give
your
phone number?
757-7436, and the code area is 631.
Could you do that again?
Say it again.
Okay. 757-7435 or 36, and the code area is 631. Give me a call.
Okay. Now, you know what's going on, don't you? We've rushed to see who's going to get in. Who's going to call? That's what's going on between us.
You know, Trevor, each week, watches us squabble with each other. And you think by now he'd give up. He didn't even put his earphones on to listen to us today.
He takes it all in stride, but we love Trevor. He does a great job for us.
Yes,
he makes
does.
Us sound better than we really are, probably. You know, my voice is not that great, you know. Thank you, Trevor. Thanks for all that hard work.
And Tony, once more, would you, just for Trevor, say your usual opening?
Don't change that dial. Live from WGBB, Long Island's oldest radio station, it's time for...
Listen up, Jesus is on the air. There, now we began officially.
Thank you, Trevor.
But you know what? Who was that old guy there? That was there, the one who couldn't remember his name. Who was that?
I don't know. It was a friend of ours.
Okay.
But you know what? They took that radio with the dials away. Trevor, why'd you take that radio away? That was an antique.
The
Oh, he's worth money.
I'm glad he didn't say where in antiques.
So, come on, let's get on with the show.
Okay.
Great guest here.
All right.
Come on.
So, what do you want? Carol, tell us a little bit about what you do at Living Waters and what you're going to be doing on the 15th of June.
Oh, I'd be happy to tell you.
And in July, there's something big going on in July, too, right?
Very big. Guess who my guests are in July?
Who?
Well, I don't remember.
Join the club, Carol.
That's what I mean. I don't remember. The memory's going. I have to write it down. Now, these two nice young men in spirit, are going to be on the radio, at Living Waters. It's called Living Waters Libations of Love.
Yes.
Yes.
In July.
And you poor woman, I talked you into doing this.
You did.
But it's working. It'll build.
But I did pray on it, so I can't say I just said yes because you talked me into it.
I'm sure you did. And you know what? I just want to mention, for those that would like to come, please come because we're going to record it. And we're going to try to put it on the radio, right, Palmer?
Sure.
You're the executive. So we're going to record the talk and the input from the audience, and we would like to interview people from the audience and get their story, get how they turned to Jesus and how Jesus turned to them.
That is beautiful.
So if we can do that, and we'll put it on the radio, and we'll evangelize till Jesus is so happy.
That's in July, but 2 weeks from today, the 15th of June. You have a very good friend of ours, Paul Miller.
Correct. Yes.
And Paul Miller has a wonderful healing ministry. He travels all over the country. And he worked with Father Red McDonough in Massachusetts and took over his ministry after Father died and would go up there with healing. And he has a wonderful, wonderful, quiet, gentle healing ministry. You know, I talk a lot. He doesn't say a word. He just puts his hands. And there are people who are just touched by God's love.
Yes.
Unbelievable. And wonderful healings all over the place. And that's June
15th. From 1 to 4 at Living Waters Counseling Center. And Living Waters is on the campus of St. Elizabeth's Church in Melville.
Oh, maybe we'll come. You pick me up, all right, Palmer?
I'll see if I can.
You need some healing?
What's your phone number there?
Our phone number is 631-754-3990. 631-754-3990. And our email address is lwcenter@live.com. lwcenter@live.com.
But now that we've got the commercial done, and we'll come back to the commercial, tell us about your whole approach to counseling at Living Waters, and you can also get into the joy that you bring to people there.
Okay. Living Waters Center is a unique place because it's located, one of the reasons is it's a bona fide counseling center with certified, licensed people who have their degrees in counseling working there, who have the Catholic faith as their tradition and believe in the teachings of the Catholic faith. But what's different about it is we're located in an old convent, the Spiritual Life Center of St. Elizabeth's, and we do have the Blessed Sacrament there. And that's why I am renting space on the campus of St. Elizabeth's, because in 2000, the Lord called me to expand my ministry since it was growing so much. And what he did say is, you need a place where the Blessed Sacrament is going to be. So in the year 2000, I did talk to some people and canvassed, and St. Elizabeth's was kind enough to say yes to my wanting to start a center there. And what happens there is amazing, miraculous at times, not all the time, but something does happen. We do plant seeds there. What we do is we clear away things that are blocking people on the emotional level and on the spiritual level that block them from understanding God's love, understanding who God truly is, and understanding why they're having so much trouble in their present life, whether it be with depression, anxiety, marital problems, you know, children having trouble, ADD. We've serviced people from age 5 to, we've had people up in the late 80s.
Oh, see, Palmer, you can
go,
too.
I can go. Thank you.
Yeah. He needs a little help. You can help him out a little bit.
But I'm in the early 90s. Can you?
Let me think about that. Let me think about that. I'm waiting for, you know, somebody a 100 to come to us, actually.
maybe we'll help you out someday.
I don't know. I'm not too far behind, so I don't know. But
I love that Adoration Center. Yeah. And when we've gone there, we did the healing prayer time in front of the Blessed Sacrament. Mm-hmm. And it's there's no question that's not just a piece of bread.
Well, there's no question about that. As a matter of fact, there's a story that I heard years ago about a Jewish psychiatrist who said before his clients came to him, he doesn't know why, he has no idea, but that they should go to a Catholic church and sit before the tabernacle for 1 hour. Would you believe this?
Mm, sure.
That's Palmer.
The Jewish psychiatrist.
Are you Jewish? Are you Jewish?
I'm not a psychiatrist, but I'm a psychologist. But I believe in that true presence
Absolutely.
Of Jesus mm-hmm. as the healing force mm-hmm. in anyone's life who just opens their heart.
And that's part of it. And so what we try to do at Living Waters, through God's grace, is help the person to get in touch with love.
Okay.
Because many times people have been so, so hurt in life that they close the heart to love. Not only love from other people, but love from God. They close their hearts. They put a wall around their hearts because they've been hurt. When you're hurt, you're start putting up, and psychologically you call it defenses, but technically it's just a wall around right. their heart. And then they don't really understand how good, how loving, and how much God wants them to come more and more into his presence so that he can give them the gifts.
I have one quick question before Palmer jumps in and before we go to Father Peter. I want to know very sincerely, when did you turn to Jesus? When did you turn to him for your practice? How did you first find Jesus? Can you share that?
Yeah. I found Jesus at a very young age. I found Jesus at First Communion. Very young. But the road, as we were going along, had twists and turns in it, as all people's roads.
Mine was.
Yeah, and it wasn't a straight path by any means. And I originally started out as a teacher, and I taught in New Jersey. But what was happening is people were coming to me and talking to me about their problems, and I did a lot of ministerial work in New Jersey. So I was going to then go to school for counseling. And what happened is my husband got transferred, and I ended up on Long Island in the late 80s, went to school here, went to Adelphi. Spirituality really wasn't a part of counseling there. Mm-hmm. But, and this was just God, and there's a background in my own family system of addictions. So I decided also to take a course in addictions so I could have a specialty in addictions, which turned out to be wonderful because I could always put it under the radar when I was working in agencies about, you know, God, because that's what a 12-step program is about. Mm. Now, I couldn't pray with people out loud in an agency, but, you know, I kind of prayed for them, and we'd always go back, because there is no healing without spiritual healing.
That's right.
There is no healing. What can happen is people using someone who's secular, and believe me, they're doing good work. I'm not saying that, because everybody can't go to this place or chooses not to go to this place. What happens is they learn how to cope better. But if you want true healing, you need God in your life.
Absolutely.
You know, I once gave a talk to the Nassau-Suffolk Social Work Association. Mm-hmm. And I began by saying, as a therapist, if you don't invite Jesus into the counseling session, you get paid for what I call circumlocution, just going around in circles. And you have to let Jesus break that circle, and he will do it. And the bringing of Jesus into counseling in prayer is for the benefit of the counselee and the counselor.
Absolutely.
And then they showed you the door.
That they what?
Then they showed you the door.
Showed you the door the way out.
No, you know what happened? Afterwards, half of the group came up. They were falling away Catholics who said, "We never heard that before in our training." And I said, "Well, go to church more often."
You don't hear it in your technical training, because the field was founded by people who were atheists. Yeah, really.
I once worked at an Albertson, I guess, and we're talking to the vice president there, who had gone through EST, which was a training program for people to make themselves into God. Yeah. And I told him that I thought the program was half EST. And not completely yes, you know. But it's the truth. He created a space.
He has a way word with words.
He created a space where in his executive meetings, I was one of the director of a program, and he said, "It's okay. You can say anything you want because I'm in EST and I can handle anything you want to say." So, and I knew, I said, "Well, I don't know how to tell you this, but since it's safe ground, you're one big son of a..." And I'm sick and tired of listening to you criticize us all the time when you don't do half the job you should do. And he looked stunned, and then he hugged me and said, "Thank you for sharing that."
And did you hug him? Did you hug him?
No, but I wasn't fired. And the other people at the table go, "Hey!"
Oh, geez, please. You know, that was the courage of the Holy Spirit.
That's a good point there. I just want to bring up the point. Jesus wants to be involved in all our lives, not only in the clinical end, but they want to be involved in our business end. Jesus would love to become our CEO of our businesses and our lives.
Yes.
And all we have to do is open our hearts and invite him in. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you psychiatrists or psychologists, you don't have a Jesus. He's for all of us.
That's right.
Of course he's for all of us.
I'm kidding.
Carol, you also work with Kubler-Ross. Would you tell people about that? Because she's had a wonderful, wonderful approach to healing through grief, going through grief.
Yes, yeah. I did work with Kubler-Ross. And also, I did many of her workshops with her. I was trained by her, and I did visit her in her last years, where she was housebound, actually, because she had a stroke. But she was a very unusual woman whose spirituality was confused. However, she did see the Blessed Mother every time she dealt with a dying child.
Wow.
And
wow.
She did put that out there.
Wow.
She did see the Blessed Mother when she dealt with a dying child. Hmm. So she knew.
And she wasn't Catholic, was she?
No, she was brought up Protestant. She was a triplet in Switzerland. And the reason she left Switzerland is because one sister was the mother's favorite, the other was the father's, and she had no one.
Oh. I was lucky. I was a twin. So one was my mother's and one was my father's. We had both.
Oh my
you know,
God.
He was an identical twin. And I told Frank, his brother, you know, "Frank, true. You got the best of the egg."
Well, it's true. He's better looking than me. He's smarter than me. He's a little taller than me.
You're right.
But I'd like to tell you one story about Elizabeth, which she often told in her very, very thick accent. She was working in the University of Chicago at the time, and she was working a lot of times on the oncology floor. This was the late 60s, early 70s. And what happened was, what she noticed, now she's a psychiatrist, so what she noticed is people, doctors and nurses and everything, would be coming out of rooms and being really down. And what she noticed is the people that were dying were really having a hard time with things. Of course, she didn't like the clinical aspects of how they were dealing with it. But she observed a black lady who was a cleaning lady, when she would come out of the hospital rooms and then Elizabeth would go in to see the dying person, they were in good space. She says, I have to figure this out. Why are they doing so well? So she approaches this black lady, and the lady goes, gets all upset because this big doctor is approaching her. And what are you doing in those rooms? What do you mean, what am I doing in those rooms? I'm just cleaning. She said, what are you doing? Well, I sing a little song as I clean, and I kind of hum to Jesus while I'm cleaning and this and that. And then I just leave. And she said, what? She said, yeah, death's not a stranger to me. I'm not afraid of death. Three of my children died. This one died. That one died. I'm not afraid of death. So Elizabeth said, wow. So Elizabeth, being nonconformist, made this lady who had no degrees and everything else one of her consultants.
Oh, isn't that something?
But, and then she spread that throughout at grand rounds throughout the hospital, explaining to the doctors and nurses, you know, because they unfortunately were caught up in their ego, like they want to save people instead of understanding that there is more than just this earth. And they are saving people by ministering to them as to where they are, but that doesn't mean that they're going to heal on a physical level.
Right.
But this black lady knew that.
Absolutely. That's wonderful. And she was chosen by Jesus. And Jesus chooses everyone.
Right.
Everyone.
Right.
So. Somebody once asked me, since I train counselors at Fordham and at St. John's and psychologists at St. John's, anyway, they would ask me, what is your philosophy? Are you Freudian? Are you conceptual? What is your... I said, I use the Longfellow approach. And they said, the Longfellow approach? I haven't read anything about that. What's that? I said, you know, you shoot an arrow in the air, you know not where it lands. What the hell? I got a lot of arrows. So I do whatever I get led by God. And it works!
Yeah, it does work. I can't even begin to tell you. There's no... Art therapists clear themselves out of them and fill themselves with the Lord. They go. I ask them to go before the Blessed Sacrament. We have Father Peter Kazmarek has come at our monthly supervision meetings. We begin with Mass, you know, and it's important for that community to build.
Right, and you're doing a great job, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
You really are.
Thanks,
And we expect that you're going to overflow with clients.
Because, you know, your spirituality just flows out of you. And I'm sure it's flowing into the audience and it's flowing into our listeners.
Mm-hmm. You know, though, there's a song, Tony, that kind of summarizes this.
I knew
this.
That was coming.
I can't help it. It's Celine Dion. And it's what your clients experienced. It's because you love me.
That's
love me, Jesus.
I love that song.
For all the wrong that you made right. For every dream you make come true, for all the love I found in you, I'll be forever thankful, baby. You're the one who held me up, never let me fall. You're the one who saw me through it all. You were my strength.
And the you she's singing about is Jesus, God the Father, the Holy Spirit. Let's get that straight.
Thank you, Paul.
Gave me wings and made me fly. You touched my hand, I could touch the because you loved me.
You know, Tony, it's no coincidence that we have a counselor and a priest here today.
Absolutely.
Because we're saying we have to combine both approaches, the spiritual and the psychological. Father Peter Kaczmarek was pastor. I met you at St. Gertrude's.
At St. Gertrude's, that's
and
right.
And you've been in the charismatic movement for a number of years. And
since 72.
Yeah.
In 72, the early days.
And now you're at St. Francis.
St. Francis of Assisi in Greenlawn for the last 4 years.
And I've had you, when we've had our Saturday seminars, you prayed with people and they were touched by the power of the Holy Spirit through you. And I know it's not easy sometimes being charismatic because you're out on the cutting edge but you do it. You like the smile.
We had a healing mass last night. We prayed the prayers of Father Alfred Fredette for generational ancestral healing.
Wonderful.
That's a beautiful format. It's an approved set of prayers, breaking the bondage and the curses of family lines and lineage. Oh. And it's a popular mass too. We had about 85 people came out for it.
Wow.
And of course pray overs afterwards. But the Lord works beautifully in that format. And I would say we're at St. Francis now. And I was told that one of our themes was supposed to be to the joy in the Lord. Well, who more than St. Francis would exemplify the joy of the Lord, you know? And the best thing about St. Francis Church, it looks like a plain, modernistic church, but we have three beautiful stained glass windows that was done with great insight and great devotion on St. Francis. Mm-hmm. The first one is St. Francis among the creatures. You know how St. Francis composed the Canticle of Brother Sun and Sister Moon. When he was out in nature, he saw God shot through everything.
Yes.
Everything revealed God's presence to him. And the first window reveals that with Francis, but the animals and a halo of light around him. Then the struggles, though, were there, too. Though on the one side is Francis receiving the stigmata. Mm-hmm. Now, not like Padre Pio all his life, but just the last 2 years, he's the first saint recorded receiving the stigmata. Maybe perhaps there were others before, but they didn't really get into the books. But what's the basis of that? People don't understand. Francis wanted to know what his friend Jesus went through. You know,
absolutely.
Most of us just barely accept the fact that Jesus said, we don't want to go through. We don't want to know what he went through. But Francis wanted to experience it
did.
In his body.
Absolutely.
So he saw it as a reward, as a gift.
Yes. Yes.
And of course, when that happened, then he became the living saint, so to speak. But he always was very humble. He didn't want to be considered a saint. You know, he wanted to be, but he was so in love with Jesus that the Lord gifted him with the stigmata.
Yes.
And then, of course, the other side, the institutional church, there's Francis writing the rule. And he was told by the Pope he had to write a rule. He didn't want to have a rule originally. He wanted it to be the gospel. He said the rule's already been written. But no, the Pope said, you got to have a rule. So he went away and he wrote a simple, humble rule, which was mostly compilation of scripture.
Right.
And then the brother said, it's not technical enough. There's not enough canon law in this. You know what I mean? So he rewrote it and finally they got what they could approve. But that's the life of Francis, the joy of the Lord, the stigmata, and the institutional struggle to get it right, you know, for the larger church and all of that. So there you see it.
And there's some other attributes and mystical things that we'll talk about in a little while.
Okay.
Father, how did you get into the charismatic movement?
In the very early days, it was very exciting. Obviously, you know, many people felt there's just something missing in the vitality and energy that there should be in our spirituality and the closeness to Jesus. And when this came along, you know, I was prayed over shortly thereafter, but then nothing happened. Nothing happened. I didn't receive any gift of tongues or anything. So I began to say to myself, well, I guess other people do receive this, but I don't. But then it was at a First Communion Mass. It was in the days before there were as many Eucharistic ministers as there are now. So the pastor was saying the Mass. Okay, and the associates were on the side ready to, after he gave the Eucharist to all of the children, we would move out. And it was a full church, of course, standing room only. And I was just overcome with joy and peace, and my tongue began to move in the praises of the Lord. I knelt down spontaneously. I was moved. I physically moved from a seating position to a kneeling position. I mean, nobody knew what was happening, but I did. And it was just as Father Flaherty was placing the first host on the first kid's tongue that all this happened.
Wow.
So it did connect by being baptized in the Spirit, at least the manifestation of it, with the gift of the Eucharist.
Absolutely.
So there's a beautiful, that was 72.
Wow.
So that was a joyful
and
moment.
You carried that spirit with you everywhere you've gone. I know it, and the parishioners know it as well.
Oh, thank you so much for that.
And you're doing a great job at St. Francis, because I go there with the meetings with Britannia. I see you have a rosary group. They help us out. They say the rosary before our meeting.
Right. There's a lot of little, devotional groups at St. Francis.
And they're wonderful. They're really
great people, too.
Yeah, really
there's the Divine Will is there. There's the Third Order Carmelites. I said, Francis is a gracious host. He allows you Carmelites to come in here.
Absolutely.
We don't even have a Franciscan Third Order, but we have a Carmelite. But they do good work.
It's so refreshing to know that you've opened up St. Francis Church of Assisi to everyone, to all the different groups, to all the... You welcomed the Britannia group with open arms, and we're so happy to be there. I'm so thankful and grateful.
Very good. Well, Fino has always been very, very gracious.
Fino
Giordano has been very, very gracious, and we like to support whatever Fino's involved. And I think he's a man of God in his own special way. And
yes.
He keeps telling people, I never asked for this.
I keep trying to quit.
I keep trying to get out of it, and Mary keeps pulling him back in.
Yeah, but you know, he really loves it.
He loves it.
I mean, let's tell the truth. And Fino, if you're listening, we know you love it.
We know you really love the role you've been given.
And we know you like being in control, Fino. Come on. Come on. Admit it, Fino. Admit it. I got Palmer to admit it. You admit it.
Very good. But it is a blessed time once a month with that. And of course, we are running the pilgrimage to Medjugorje. You know,
I've tried
to support Sister Marcy Purpura's ministry. Sister Marcy's been to Medjugorje about 75 times.
I love her.
You know, she really pioneered the introduction of Medjugorje to Long Island and New York area people. She's really part of the Medjugorje story herself, but she's humble enough that you can't get everything out of her, you know. But the last couple of years, I've tried to see to it, even as her physical mobility has declined, her ability to get around. She's had hip and back and knee trouble and various other things, and she did slip and fall in Medjugorje last year. So, you know, but we're hoping that she'll continue in this ministry, and I've tried to, you know, be a support to her and organize trips built around the way she likes to run them. She likes to stay with original farm families.
Absolutely.
She uses only a guide who is part of the original prayer group that Mary wanted, and we do a couple of special things that you don't get in the other pilgrimages. So we'll see how it goes. We do have our group, but we've had to this year incorporate other people from other groups, you know, that came, some coming from Australia, some from Oklahoma, some from the Midwest. But we'll have a good mix.
When are you going?
The 19th to the 27th of June, this June. And you can still get aboard. There'll be a little bit of a supplemental fee you'll have to pay for the extra ticket, but you can still get aboard the pilgrimage.
They can call you, Father?
They can call me, and we'll move it from there.
What was your phone number again?
757-7436.
631.
Yes, 631.
Okay, you want to say it again?
Okay, 631-757-74, either 35 or 36, whichever one goes through.
And if your heart is telling you to go to Medjugorje, he's the guy to go with.
Yeah.
Because Sister Marcy, by the way, 10 years ago when I was at Medjugorje, I was stranded. And she picked us up as lost souls and let us stay with her group and took us all around Medjugorje. It was just my wife, myself, my brother, and another lady.
Oh, wow. Sure you.
And she had mercy on us, and we love it.
Then you probably met Franjo too.
Yes,
Franjo Zubats.
Yes,
yeah, you met him.
Absolutely.
He's a gift too. Really, people don't really appreciate him the first time, but he's a gift of the Lord to the group. He really is.
And Sister Marcy was so gracious and spoke with us, stood with us, because she knew we were stranded people.
That's right. Beautiful.
How did you get stranded?
We went on a tour. And
you have to know him to understand this.
the tour we went on, they didn't have anybody else on the tour. It was just, and we didn't know this, it was just my wife, myself, my brother, and another lady in that group. And so there was nothing
that was
going
tour.
On. Yeah. And so Sister Marcy happened to come by, picked us up, and we just stood with her group. And
you know, Father, it's really fortuitous that you're at St. Francis of Assisi Church. Because that's you. That's the way you are as a priest, and you're filled with love.
Well, I like to put a little jab in, because Polish priests like myself, we've always been working on Irish pastors.
God. So now be careful.
Here in this diocese, we have five churches named after St. Patrick,
yes,
but only one after St. Francis. So I think that they say where the power has been leading in one direction for a while here, but it's okay. It's okay.
And you're running a street fair, aren't you?
That's right. We're running a carnival feast. We're honoring Pope Francis in our prayer booth this year.
Wonderful.
But it's a regular carnival feast. We have the rides, the games. We're having our own little Italian bistro. Okay, this is a new effort on serving some different kind of food. A wonderful fellow who's been in the restaurant business is donating a lot of time and effort and gathering a lot of free merchandise. So we'll have a wonderful pasta bistro, plus our regular hamburgers, hot dogs, and the other things you can get at the feast. We'll have some vendors, and you, Tony, have told me we can get a few more through you as time goes on.
Yes.
And various other things, that'll be joyful. Our youth group will be playing, music a couple of nights. We'll have the Spirit Lifters. That's a local spiritual group that will be playing. So we're really trying to make it, not simply a carnival, but a spiritual festival as best we can. But lighthearted.
When is this, Father?
The 13th to the 15th, Thursday night to Sunday night, right in June, right 2 weeks from today.
St. Francis is a very active parish. You can feel it as soon as you pull up into the parking lot and see it.
Not the biggest place, but a loving heart.
A beautiful place.
A loving heart,
yeah. Yeah, beautiful. I'm very impressed, and again, thank you so much for allowing us to
use it. Sure, no problem.
By the way, just so this is not a commercial, but tomorrow I'll be at a fair in Farmingdale at on Main Street off Conklin. So I'll be there. If you have a listening audience wants to come and say hello, come and say hello. We'll talk.
Okay.
Beautiful.
And Father, just before we move on, because he's going to talk about St. Francis.
I'm going to have one question for Father.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I have one question, and I ask this question to everyone. When did you know you were going to be a priest? Or when did you decide you were going to, or how did you come to the priesthood?
Well, I'll tell you the truth. You have to not be a chauvinist in this operation here. You have to be very honest, okay? You probably got my vocation to the priesthood as much through the sisters as through the priests. You know what I mean? Because they were exemplary women, who were dedicated and so forth. And they would talk about the priesthood, and they would talk about what a great thing it would be if a couple of the people in the class. We would say Boniface Parish, in the old days when there were over 1,000 kids in the school, where they had to build little wooden partitions downstairs to create more classrooms. All would be forbidden today, but in those days it was 50, 60 kids in a class, a lot of nuns teaching, a very vibrant place. And the church was open during lunch hours. In those days, nothing ever happened. Kids went home for lunch unsupervised and came back, and people would be frightened of that today, but there was no problems in those days. So every once in a while, I'd be praying in church during lunch hour. And I think I got it there. Around 7th, 8th grade, I became an altar server, all right? And the rest is history, I guess. And my dad wasn't so sure about it. He thought it was a little early to be thinking about that. But I was able to make the cut as far as being in the founding class of St. Pius X Prep Seminary, the first thing Bishop Kellenberg did. Now St. Pius is closed because fewer high school kids are able to focus in that way now. But, I was able to be part of that. And there's still some of us from that founding class that are still functioning. And Monsignor Pete Flum is maybe the most distinguished classmate that I might have. But others came in and along the way. Father Frank Monsignor Madura passed on recently. He was a classmate, too. And, so just to mention those things. But that's how it happened. St. Boniface Parish, both the nuns and the priests.
It's a beautiful story. And you know what? It just comes to mind how unsung heroes the nuns are. Mm-hmm. And how many priests they really brought to the ministry.
Right. We just about last year, Monsignor Pat Armshaw was also from St. Boniface Parish, and myself attended the funeral of Sister Rose Michael, our 8th grade teacher. She was an Amityville Dominican, and she was the original flying nun. The original flying nun, because she was a little athletic. She could actually climb a tree in her full habit. And so we have a picture of her up in a tree, spreading her arms like as if she's going to take off, you see. But she was an influence for good in a thousand ways.
Okay.
And you know, I know, Tony, you are prepared to talk about St. Francis of Assisi.
Yes, I am. And,
please.
As a matter of fact, I researched at 2 o'clock this morning, and the reason why I chose St. Francis of Assisi is in honor of a father from his parish, St. Francis of Assisi. And I also thought it would bring a little more knowledge to and a little more insight on the Pope, Pope Francis. And so St. Francis was born to a very rich family. His father was very dominating. As a matter of fact, when he was born, his father wasn't around. He was a rich merchant. And he wasn't there when he was born. So the mother named him, I believe it was John. And when the father came back and he heard that the mother named him John, he says, absolutely not. His name is going to be Francis. So they had to change the name to Francis.
Change the name to Francis.
Yes. And so what happened was Francis was like a son of a rich family. And he sort of at the beginning took advantage of it. And he went to, he had a good time. He's a good looking guy. He went out and he had a good time.
Had a good time, sure.
And he got ill. And while he was ill, he sort of start thinking and start, what do you call it? I believe that's when Jesus started sort of like approaching him and making himself known to him. And so as he was laying in bed, he started thinking more and more of Jesus. And when he got better and he went out, instead of going out with his friends, he went into a church that was run down. It was like dilapidated, so to speak. And as he was praying in the church, he heard a voice saying, Francis, repair my church, fix my church. So he got that idea, and he agreed that he was going to do that. But his father was rich, and his father was away. And so what he did, he took a few of his father's possessions and he sold them. and he gave it to the church. He gave the proceeds to the church to help to fix it up, and they started fixing it up. His father came back. I'm just giving you a little background of him before we get involved with other stuff. But his father came home, and he saw that stuff was missing, that he had possessions that weren't there anymore. And he questioned, and he said to Francis, Francis, have you seen my stuff? I'm missing a lot of things here. And Francis says, oh, yes, Father. I sold them because I wanted to help the church. Father got furious. What? You did what? I want them back and I want the money. He grabbed them, brought them to the bishop's office. And he said to the bishop, look, my son took some of my possessions and sold them and gave them to you to fix the church. I don't like that. I want them back or I want my money. So the bishop says to Francis, Francis, you know your father's right. You really had no right to give these things to us. And the father says, and I want them back. And I want you to know, Francis, nothing belongs to you. It all belongs to me. And Francis stood there, took his clothes off, stripped himself, put him before the father's feet, and says, now you have everything, and I have nothing. I have Jesus. And so that's what started him on his mission of poorness. And so he walked out, no clothes, and had to get stuff to put on him. And he sort of like Jesus did. He started his mission, started picking up followers, started praying, and you know, Jesus was just guiding him. He gave himself to the poor. He made himself poor. He was humble. And he just changed from night to day, I guess from the Holy Spirit. And so, but that's just the background I wanted to talk about, Saint Francis. But I just wanted you to know that there are a lot of tributes that people just don't know about Saint Francis. I'd like to quickly mention them.
Go ahead.
And maybe give you a good insight of what our new Pope Francis is all about. Because Saint Francis is his mentor. Knowing the life and the attributes of Saint Francis tells us a little something that the psychiatrist and the psychologist probably can't tell us. No pun meant. I'm sorry, Palmer.
It's all right. But I don't care.
but there are things about him and mystical things that he has that are worth knowing about. By the way, did you know who first originated the Christmas crib? Who started it?
St. Paul.
St. Francis.
No.
St. Francis was the one that got the image of a crib for Jesus around Christmas time when he wanted to pay tribute to Jesus at his birth. And he started the Christmas crib. He had people dressed up in garments and actually lived out the birth of Jesus. And so started the Christmas crib of our faith for the birth of Jesus. But he had other, so many mystical things about him. He had the stigmata, his father had said. On the stigmata, there were characteristics that were never seen in others. He actually felt the pain of the nails going into him. He asked for it. It's not that he didn't want it. He wanted to feel the pain of Jesus. And so he was so blessed. He had the gift of multiplying food when it was not there. Just like Jesus with the 5 loaves of bread. At one time he was in a boat and there were no provisions to feed the people on the boat and the stormy trip. And he took some food and he was able to make vast amounts of the best food and the best wine available just by handing it out like Jesus did. On the stigmatas, he felt the pain, but he actually felt the agony besides of being on the cross. I don't know if anyone else that I've read that had that experience. He suffered unbearable pain from the stigmata, but he also got so much spiritual joy out of that suffering. He actually received so much joy from the suffering, knowing what Jesus went through. He had mystical knowledge. He had many instances of knowing the thoughts of his brethren, so that with the grace of God, he was able to give advice and be confident to them, knowing what they were thinking. Something like, I guess, Padre Pio. And he knew when he spoke to his fellow priest that he was given advice from Jesus. His body was transformed after death. I don't know if people knew anything about that. After the death of St. Francis, his brethren priests gazed at his body and wept in jubilation. There appeared in him a true image of the cross of the Passion of the Lamb, without blemish, who washed away the sins of the world. For he seemed, though he had been taken down from the cross. That's the way his body looked. And he had went through the suffering. And so his fellow priest, in looking at him, got the image of Jesus being laid in the arms of the Blessed Mother. His clothes had sweet odors and had been stained from the blood, and that blood gave out sweet odors. And to this very day, the linens are still preserved in Assisi, that on certain feasts, the sweet perfumes of the blood is apparent. He spoke to animals. He lectured to the birds, his father had said. He knew that they were God's creation. And guess what? when he walked into the forest, they all gathered around him. The birds flew down from the heavens. He spoke to them about Jesus, about the Father, gave them. I don't know what was going on, but they followed him all over. They stood on his shoulder and he walked through the woods.
Sounds like Walt Disney.
Yeah.
But real.
He had influence on fruits and flowers. In order to triumph over a temptation, he was tempted greatly by the evil one. And of course, the evil one would have loved to got his hands on him. But in order to avoid himself from the temptation, took roses with thorns and put it on him so that he would feel the agony of when Jesus was crowned with the thorns. And with that movement, those roses became roses without thorns. Till today, that species of roses grow without thorns.
Wow.
And so these are things that people don't really, I don't know if they know about St. Francis.
Not that way.
We should know. We should relate it to our Pope, because he's our Pope's mentor. He was able to control a wolf that was terrorizing the town and was killing people. And he walked out into the forest and he says, "No, don't go out there. That wolf is going to kill you." And the wolf saw him, set himself up to leap at him. And St. Francis did the sign of the cross. And that wolf went down on his poor fours and just laid down on the ground. Got up, went up to him, and just followed him around. He brought him to the town. He was right by his side. And he said, "He will not harm you anymore.
Amen.
We made a deal. You feed him, and he'll never bother you again." And so they did. And he never bothered them again. One more thing. He was able to let water in a dry spot. And he prayed over the rock, just like Moses or other times. He prayed over the rock, and before you knew it, water started oozing out of the rock. And he told the townspeople, "You have water. This is a gift from God."
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And so that's like a quick, brief biography of St. Francis of Assisi and why I could see why our good Pope chose him as his mentor, because he remembers the poor. He lived with the poor. He wanted to be poor. He gave everything away. I don't know how many of us would do that, but he did. And so this is in honor of you, Father, and your ministry, and to give a little insight about our good Pope Francis. And so that's my story.
I'm glad it was quick and short and to the point.
You know what?
Gave me a chance to go to the men's room and everything.
You know what, Palmer? I thought you were walking out on me. I got nervous.
Well, I was, but I had an emergency. You know. But,
anyway, there was a lot more I could have said. I abbreviated it, but he was a great saint.
I just want to talk about our Pope, because he did something very unusual just this past week.
Absolutely.
He sent out a message to every parish and every diocese that tomorrow, the Feast of Christ the King, he wants parishes all over the world to have adoration at the same time. It's 6 o'clock in Rome, and here in the East Coast, it's 11 o'clock. And he wants everybody who is Catholic to pray before Jesus, like Francis, and just be open and petition Jesus for peace and love in the world.
Isn't that a great tribute?
Wow.
Oh, that's
the
wonderful
Pope.
That's our
that's
Pope.
That's our new Pope.
That's our humble Pope.
And
that's our Pope of the poor.
And what we're going to do, no matter what we do, we're going to build the city of God, everybody.
That's
and
right.
You who are listening, you don't have to talk to animals. We don't want them talking back to you. But get out there and build the city of God. This is John Michael Talbot. Good night, everybody. Good day, everybody. And Carol and Father, thank you.
And thank you, listeners. We love you dearly. And our prayers go out to you, each and every one of you, and to our petitions.
And June 8th is next Saturday. June 8th.
Special guest. June 8th. Remember the date. June the 8th.
Bye now.
For all those who of darkness have seen a great light. The Lord of our longing has conquered the night. Let us build the city of God. May your tears be turned into dancing. For the Lord, our light and our love, has turned the night into day. Let us build the city of God. May your tears be turned into dancing. For the Lord, our light and our love, has turned the night, turned the night. Of the day, the one who has loved us has brightened our way. The Lord of all kindness has called us to be a light for the nations to set captives free. City of God, may your tears be turned into dancing. For the Lord, our light and our love, has turned the night into day. Let us build the city of God. May your tears be turned into dancing.
Did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.